following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
Great to have you with us. Joining us now, former campaign manager for the President Trump campaign. He's now actively participating in this campaign in many ways. He's also an author. Got to read his book, Let Trump Be Trump. He's got another book coming out, Trump's Enemies. That's coming out November 22nd. Circle that date on your calendar. Circle two dates, November 6th and November 22nd. Joining us now, Corey Lewandowski. Hey, Corey, great to have you with us.
Good morning, John. It's great to be with you.
So give us an update. Where are you traveling today? I know you're with the vice president. Tell me what's happening.
Well, first, let me just back up and tell you yesterday we spent the day in Michigan traveling on behalf of two congressional candidates and one candidate for the U.S. Senate. His name is John James. He is a rock star. He's the future of the Republican Party. And we may wake up 1 week from tomorrow and see John James, combat veteran, African-American, as the next Republican U.S. Senator from Michigan. It is a big upset in the works. I like it a lot. I spent all day in Michigan yesterday, and I'm very excited about his candidacy. Today, the trip is to Alabama. We're going to continue to, the vice president is going to continue to raise money for the Great America Committee, which is his hard money political action committee. He's raising money for the National Republican Senatorial Committee. And this marks somewhere around the 170th trip and event that the vice president has done since the start of this this year in order to help candidates running for office.
Well, he certainly worked hard, and I want to make note that Corey Lewandowski with us is also a senior advisor for the Great America Committee. And for more information on that, that's the vice president's hard money pack. Go to greatamericacommittee.com, greatamericacommittee.com. Corey, I want to get to another race that you told me about months ago, and I got to say, I didn't take you seriously. You said, John, I want you to keep an eye on New Jersey, and Bob Hogan has a shot to pull the upset of the day there. And I'm like, oh, come on, you got to be kidding me. Now we're looking at polls. It's tied. He could win New Jersey. You were right.
John, like I know people don't believe me sometimes. They think I'm crazy or whatever it may be. Like, hey, Lewandowski doesn't know what he's doing again, but I've been watching this race. I know this candidate. He's a fantastic candidate. He's strong. He's put a lot of his own personal resources in. The hard reelect for Senator Menendez, who was tried by the Obama Department, Justice Department, for his crimes, the hard reelect for Menendez is like 24%. And the people of New Jersey deserve better. Even the liberal newspapers in New Jersey are saying, boy, basically the guy is a criminal is all about what they said. They said you can vote for him, but it's not going to help New Jersey. And I'm telling you, we have an opportunity in that race to put a Republican in the U.S. Senate from New Jersey, which 7 months ago nobody would have thought of. That race is a nail biter. I think we win it.
Okay, I'm predicting that the Republicans pick up five seats in the U.S. Senate. Call me crazy, but I think you're going to hold serve in Arizona with McSally. Nevada, I didn't think you would win that, but I understand that the Heller campaign is doing much better than people thought. If he hangs on, then you've got five seats you can pick up. If you pick New Jersey up, you actually can pick up six seats. It's incredible, right?
Well, that's right. And John, we're going to hold Tennessee. Marsha Blackburn is a great candidate there. That's right. The Bob Corker retirement seat. We're going to hold that. And then our opportunities to win are vast. Look, the president and I believe the vice president going back out to Montana, that's an opportunity for us to win. Missouri is an opportunity where we're going to win. North Dakota, we're going to win, I think. Florida, we're exceptionally competitive, and I think Rick Scott pulls that race out right there. Indiana, the vice president's home state. I know the president and the vice president both going there later this week. That's an opportunity for a pickup. That's five seats right there, excluding the New Jersey race, excluding the Michigan race. Look, if things break our way on election night, which 2 years ago, not only did they break our way, but they broke our way big because the people were tired of Washington send a message. If the people send a message again, we could have the largest Republican majority in the U.S. Senate in somewhere north of 80 years. We could end up with 58 or 59 Republican members. It would be phenomenal. And just think of what those people could do to get the Trump-Pence agenda done.
Well, you really could have 59 if you say, because you've got five that I think we're going to win. Those are the five that I've predicted are going to go the Republicans' way, Trump's way. But then West Virginia, New Jersey, and Michigan. And you look at the West Virginia polls and you say, Manchin's going to win. He's way ahead. But then you see the president going back to West Virginia again. So they must know something we don't. But, Corey, comment on the president's rally schedule. I mean, it's unbelievable. He's gotten like nine rallies in 5 days. It's an unbelievable schedule he has.
John, it's reminiscent of the 2016 campaign when he just sheer outworked Hillary Clinton, when he was doing four, five, and six rallies a day at the last week of the election. And you'd think every single time you turned on the television, he was doing another rally in another state in a different time zone. He's got 11 rallies starting tomorrow. So from Wednesday to next Tuesday, he's got Wednesday to next Monday, he's got 11 rallies planned. That means he's doing on some days three rallies in multiple time zones in multiple states. This is a guy who wants to make sure that the people know what is at stake in this election. And you couple that with the intense schedule that Mike Pence has, and you're going to see the Trump-Pence administration, their team, doing north of 18 rallies in the next 7 days. That's a phenomenal number. And this is because they know exactly what is at stake. Keeping the House in Republicans' hands is absolutely critical unless we want to divert to the chaos, which was, the Kavanaugh hearings, which is that the Democrats have no agenda. Their agenda is impeachment of the president. Their agenda is impeachment of Justice Kavanaugh. Their agenda is getting rid of ICE and open borders. And so that's what's at stake this election. So you're going to see between the president and the vice president something north of 18 rallies starting tomorrow all the way through Election Day, which is very, very reminiscent of Election Day 2016 leading up to it.
I remember that very well, and that was, I think, the reason you guys were able to put the president over the top. You did rally after rally after rally. I remember emceeing a rally at, where was it, George Mason University Saturday night for Vice President Mike Pence came in, and then I went and emceed one the following night, Sunday night at like 1 a.m. in Loudoun County someplace. So, I mean, the schedule this man can keep President Trump is unbelievable. Corey Lewandowski with us, former campaign manager for the Donald Trump for President campaign, is also a very noted author. Got to read his book, Let Trump Be Trump, best book written on the campaign. It's just a great read. If you haven't, go buy it. You can buy it at B. Dalton. You can buy it at Amazon, anywhere. It's there, Let Trump Be Trump. Got another book coming out November 22nd, Trump's Enemies After the Election. Corey Lewandowski is going to name names of the people in the agencies, in the White House, in the West Wing that go in there every day to do nothing but undermine the president and his agenda. Corey, let's get to the House. Math there a little tighter. I had Scott Rasmussen on yesterday. I trust him. I think he's accurate. And he said to me, John, look, the Democrats need 23 seats, but they don't really need 23. They need 12. They need 11 seats because 12 of the 23 are already gone for the Republicans. Mail them in. Democrats are going to win those. So there's a remaining 29 Republican seats that are toss-ups held by Republicans now that the Democrats have to win 11 of those 29, and Nancy Pelosi has the gavel. How do you pull this out?
Well, look, I think we've got an opportunity for a couple pickup seats. I know I've mentioned this many times. Now that we're a week out, I think it's fair to say that the Republicans are going to pick up those two seats in Minnesota. So our majority is not 23, but I believe it to be 25, which is a little better for us. And that being said, when I look at the generic ballot, meaning are you going to vote for a Democrat or a Republican, regardless of who is on the ballot in the midterm elections, that number, according to the Washington Post, which I take with a grain of salt, is a minus three for the Republicans. At a minus three, the Republicans are going to hold the House. We've seen that number as bad as, a minus 12 or a minus 15 in the past.
Right.
And now the Republicans have closed that gap dramatically. And, I've been in Pennsylvania last week. I was in Michigan yesterday, Alabama today. I think I'm in Florida. I mean, I'm just all tomorrow in Florida, I believe. So all over the country. And what we're seeing is in the races where Democrats are supposed to win in a walk, and I'm thinking specifically of Pennsylvania and some seats in New Jersey, where Democrats were just supposed to win. It was done those races have become much more competitive. And I look at the member-to-member matchup, meaning two incumbents running against each other in a new district. There's only one of those in the country right now. It's Keith Rothfuss against Connor Lamb in Pennsylvania. And Connor Lamb won the special election against Gary Saccone a couple months back. Mm-hmm. And Keith Rothfuss is the incumbent. Because of redistricting, they put two incumbent members of Congress together. That is a race where Connor Lamb, 6 weeks ago, was up 14 to 17 points. Today, that's a four-point race, which tells me Republicans are coming home. They're energized. The president and the vice president are doing their job reminding everyone exactly what's at stake. So I respect Scott. I think he's an excellent pollster. But I also remember where we were 2 years ago, John, where they told us Donald Trump's chances of being the president of the United States were less than 1% when we woke up on election morning, when they told us that the Republicans were going to get blown out, that we couldn't win in any of these places, that, you know, race after race after race, from Pennsylvania to Wisconsin, those U.S. senators are going to lose because Donald Trump was on the top of the ticket. Not only did we win those races, Donald Trump pulled them across the line. And now I think the people are understanding that while the president isn't on the ballot officially, in a week from today, his policies are, his agenda is, and I think they're going to turn out and say, look, right now we are better off today than we were 2 years ago, and we don't want to go backwards. So I know what Scott's numbers say. I respect him a lot. I think we're going to do better than expected. Do I think we're going to gain seats in the House? I don't. I'm a realist. But do I think there's a momentum right now, the wind at our back a little bit, that allows the Republicans to hold on to the House in a smaller majority? Yes, I do.
All right, so I'm thinking we can hold on by 3 to 5. I think that's the most realistic scenario we have, but it's good to see that some of the momentum is changing. Corey, over the weekend, the horrible shooting at the synagogue, then we got these pipe bombs. That's crazy. Crazy people doing crazy things. The fake news, the Washington Post runs an editorial basically blaming Trump for all of this. Number one, what is your reaction to this?
To me, and you know, I do want to give a little credit to some of the media outlets over this weekend to call out the Washington Post on their disgusting, not only their editorial, but their headline, which appeared on Saturday morning, blaming Trump for the pipe bomb issues. And look, Chris Wallace from Fox News held up the newspaper. It was the lead story on Saturday morning, and Chris showed it on Sunday, and it said, you know, Trump supporter, you know, bombing, whatever it was. It's amazing to me the vitriol of some of the members of the mainstream media who want to blame the president for things that he has nothing to do with. I don't ever recall, John, I'm not trying to pass the buck or divert here, but I don't ever recall them saying, you know, Bernie Sanders supporter mows down, tries to kill 200 members of Congress at a congressional baseball practice. You know, you don't see that. You didn't see, and I'm disgusted by this, but the individual who committed these heinous crimes at the synagogue or is alleged to have committed these crimes was a Trump hater. You don't see Democrat supporter commits atrocity at synagogue as the headline. Look, the media wants to go after this president for all the wrong reasons. They don't want to give him credit, and they are, at some level, responsible for the headlines and the editorials that they print of driving a narrative which has vitriol against the president, and it's shameful, and they need to be held accountable too, and I hope that the American people do that.
Well, I'm not sure if they will, but look, I go to those press conferences. As you know, I'm a White House correspondent. I was there yesterday, and the questions you get from some of the media, the fake news media in the front row, especially CNN, it's just ridiculous. And that's just part of the problem is out of 10 questions, you're going to get three that are legitimate. All the others are just to embarrass the president or shout something out or some other such nonsense. Now, you had the bombing, the pipe bomb, crazy guy that got arrested. You had the horrible shooting in the synagogue. As you know, the president and the first lady going to Pittsburgh today. That's the right thing to do. A lot of people telling me, look, this has slowed the Republican momentum down. The people are now scared about what's going on, and maybe it's the president's rhetoric, and that the momentum the Republicans have had have stopped. True or false?
No, it's false. As a matter of fact, our country is going to become stronger after a national tragedy. It always does. And what I have called for, and I said this last week, and I'll say it again, is we need to be able to disagree with each other but not be disagreeable. The president is the consoler in chief. He and the first lady, as well as his daughter and son-in-law, who happen to both be Jewish, are going to Pittsburgh today to be part of the comforting process for those families who are impacted by this and the nation as a whole. We can never tolerate this, but this is where the president is his strongest. When he sees something that is wrong, he doesn't look at Republican or Democrat, independent, black, white, yellow, green. It doesn't matter. He just wants to fix it. And what took place in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, was a horrific display of atrocity, of anti-Semitism, which will never be tolerated by anyone in this country, should never be tolerated by anyone in this country. And this president's going to go there and remind the world of why we're the greatest country. We are going to unite when tragedy happens. He is going to be, he is the president of everybody in this country. And toning down the rhetoric is important. We have a very important election in 7 days, but no election is worth what is taking place in issues like that synagogue or attempting to have pipe bombs kill elected or former elected officials. We're the greatest country in the world. We're not a banana republic. We need to understand that we are better when we are stronger and we are together. And that's what the president's going to talk about in Pittsburgh.
We're with Corey Lewandowski, senior advisor for the Vice President's Political Action Committee, now Great America Committee. You can get more information. Just go to greatamericacommittee.com. Corey, I've got about a minute and a half. The president, in an interview with Axios, we understand last night, said that he is ready to do an executive order to stop the birthright citizenship, the anchor baby idea. A lot of us have been saying that's one of the biggest problems we have with immigration. What say you?
Look, it is an issue with immigration. Unfortunately, I don't think the president has the legal authority to amend the Constitution of the United States. And what will happen is, my guess, and what was exactly what took place when he issued other executive orders, is a court is going to step in. They're going to put a stay on it immediately. And I'm sure the White House has already thought through what the legal challenges are going to be to this. And ultimately, this is going to end up being litigated at the Supreme Court at the highest levels of the land. And they're going to make a decision. But that decision will not be reached in the next 7 days. It probably won't be reached in the next 3 months. But the president and his team, White House counsel, et cetera, believes that there is a quirk in the amendment that says that the individuals born here are subjected to the laws of the country that they're in. And there is a quirk there that says these people were here illegally, so they're not given citizenship through birthright. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think they're going to litigate in the court system. But this executive order, if it is released, will not be implemented immediately. My guess is there will be a stay or multiple stays put on it by a federal judge, and this will be heard at the Supreme Court sometime.
With SRA.
All right, I think that's exactly it. We got 7 days. I want to thank Corey Lewandowski for being with us. Thank you so much. Corey Lewandowski, former campaign manager, Trump for President campaign. Go read his book, Rabbi Spiro. He's called America's Rabbi. Rabbi, good to have you with us, sir. It's been way too long.
Same here. Good to be here.
Rabbi, walk us through Saturday in Pittsburgh, please.
Well, Saturday, which in Hebrew was called Shabbat, that's the day of the week where most people who do attend synagogue, they go on Saturday. It's a holy day. It's the Sabbath. And they were in a synagogue praying, and there was also a ritual service going on. I think it was perhaps it was a bris where a young boy is inducted when he's about 8 years old into the Jewish people, and there's a nice ritual, and the family gets together. And early in the morning, I guess about 9:45, the services usually start around 9 o'clock. This gunman came in. He was a neo-Nazi, anti-Trump fellow, neo-Nazi, and he started shooting. And he ended up killing, right there in the synagogue, 11 people, wounding others. And nobody in the synagogue had a gun, so they had to wait until the police came, the squad, and the police did a good job. Four of them were injured, but it took about 15, 20 minutes to come from the time of the call. And so we have this situation that it was a situation where there's slaughter, where there's murderer, that he wanted to kill Jews, and he did. And it's probably, I mean, there's no question, it's the single largest attack against Jews in America in American history. which does show, though, how different America is than Europe. In Europe, Jews, for thousands of years, they were being slaughtered and killed by the thousands all the time, pogroms. And in America, I think the history is that only one Jewish person was ever killed. It was lynched specifically because he was Jewish. So we've been here in America since, the 1600s. The first group of Jews came from in about 1640. And so that's, it's almost 350 years at least. And this has been the worst incident. But up until now, we've pretty much been spared any real physical attacks against us on this scale.
Rabbi, what about some of those in the legacy media blaming the horrific massacre on President Trump's rhetoric? On make of that, Rabbi?
Oh, well, that's terrible. President Trump has been such a pro-Israel president, and he's pro-Jewish. His daughter converted to Judaism. His grandchildren are Jewish. Back in New York, I remember when he used to march up on Fifth Avenue on the Israel Day Parade. He was the Grand Marshal. He and his father donated a building or some land to Jewish people in the Brooklyn area to have a synagogue. He's not only does he like Jewish people, he's comfortable with them. A lot of times we like certain people, but we're not necessarily socially comfortable with them. He's very comfortable. This is terrible. This is people that they're liars, and because of their politics, because they want to win, they want to get back in power, or they don't like the president's agenda, they say these things, they're lies. It's terrible when a man devotes his life to being kind to a community, and then people come and say that he disdains that community. It's just a terrible thing. And the media, mainstream media, if they had any integrity, they wouldn't allow this stuff to be communicated on their airwaves. They would check it out. But they want to defame the president, so we have this terrible situation. Poor President Trump. I feel bad for him.
Well, it's sad. I mean, he had nothing to do with this, and he is, as you say, pro-Israel. His family is Jewish. His grandchildren are of the Jewish faith. So to blame the president for what happened in Pittsburgh, it's unconscionable to me, Rabbi, and it's sick. It's just sick. And that's kind of the state. It's sick, isn't it?
A lot of these anti-Trump people, they have a mental illness. You know, you can disagree with his policies, but to have such a visceral hate like this,
right?
It's almost like it's un-American. It reveals that there's some type of sickness inside. It's toxic. I hate to be around people like that. When people start off with this anti-Trump stuff, I say, hey, nice knowing you. Good day. Shalom. Bye-bye. I'm out of here. It's
Shalom.
Toxic. It's poison.
That's such an accurate description. You're on the John Fredericks Radio Network. We're chatting with Rabbi Spiro. He is America's rabbi. And Rabbi, it's been too long since I had you on. I just can't, you know, the time goes. We got an election coming up in a week. But let me ask you this, Rabbi. How do we heal this country? I mean, I had Steve Bannon on earlier, and he's about my age. I'm in my 60s. And I said, Steve, you know, you and I grew up during the Vietnam era. So I remember the marches and the protests and the sit-ins in Kent State. And my father, Rabbi, who was anti-communist and so was in favor of our Vietnam intervention. But I remember my father taking me to Central Park in New York to watch the protesters. And he said to me, hey, I don't agree with these people, but this is what your country is about. You can do this. And when you're of age, son, you can do whatever you want if you don't like what's going on, which I thought was an amazing thing he did because he couldn't stand the guy. But how do we get the country healed, Rabbi?
I don't think the country needs to heal. What we need is to try to stop and protect ourselves from people on the extreme right or the extreme left that use violence. Antifa is very dangerous. They beat up people, innocent people. Black Lives Matters is very dangerous. They kill cops. They're proud of it. And these neo-Nazis are very dangerous. So we've got to protect ourselves from this. And at least on our side, we condemn anyone on the right that does this type of physical violence. Where on the left, on the liberal side, I haven't seen them.
Talk radio, AM 600, 101.1 FM, WBOB.
With SRN News, I'm Gordon Griffin. The remains of a Utah mayor who was also a major in the Utah Army National Guard and killed in Afghanistan are scheduled to arrive Monday evening at Dover Air Force Base in Delaware. Authorities say funeral plans are still pending for 39-year-old Brent Taylor. Officials say he was training commandos in Afghanistan and died when a member of the Afghan security forces shot him on Saturday. Taylor leaves behind a wife and seven children. A Western Wisconsin school district making counselors available for students following the deaths of three Girl Scouts and a parent who were killed in a hit-and-run crash along a rural road. A man trying to stop a shooting attack on a Florida yoga studio says that he wrestled with the attacker when his gun jammed, a move credited with giving others time to flee the gunman who killed two people and wounded six others. He made those comments as he spoke to ABC's Good Morning America this morning. This is SRN News.
Hi, it's Mac with Baker Glass. If you're having trouble finding a clear option for that new shower enclosure or a replacement for that fog glass, then call the Baker Boys or find us at BakerGlassInc.com. That's BakerGlassInc.com. Baker Glass, no one treats you better. Hi, this is Mac with Baker Glass, where we use our more than 32 years of experience to provide a complete glass service to all of our customers and a clear choice for you. See for yourself at BakerGlassInc.com. That's BakerGlassInc.com. Baker Glass, no one treats you better.
Attention all men. Have Viagra and Cialis let you down? Think your best days are behind you? Think again. If you suffer from any type of ED, regardless of your age or medical history, the doctors at Alpha Medical Group can help you now. There is no needles, no surgery, and no medication. Just the newest available proven treatment from Europe using acoustic energy waves. Our FDA-cleared medical device regenerates blood vessels and erectile tissue with short in-office sessions, and it's all done with virtually no needles, no surgery, and no medication. Call now for full information. Call 904-763-1400. That's 904-763-1400. 100% natural, non-invasive way to fix erectile dysfunction. Call 904-763-1400 today and get your life back with Alpha Medical Group. Call 904-763-1400 or visit our website at alphamedicalgroup.com.
Find a new home through Home Finder Realty. Listing or buying a residential property or planning to build? Call Home Finder Realty. Home Finder Realty has multiple 3 to 4 bedroom homes available for rent in the Intercoastal area, many with community pools. A beautiful new 4 bedroom in Buccaneer Point, 4 bedroom with 3-car garage in Windsor Chase, 3 bedroom with 2nd floor bonus room in Johns Creek. Rent a 3,100 square foot gorgeous 4 bedroom in Old Mill Creek between Town Center and Tinseltown. For information on these and other rentals, call Robert McDonald at Home Finder Realty, 241-5501 or HFRJack.
WBOB tackles the issues.
When I look at some of these mass shootings that have happened in the past, a lot of these teachers had to sacrifice themselves to protect their students. Well, why not put them in the best position to fight back?
Every day.
Federal district judge in California expanded the ruling to say that even accompanied children can't be held for more than 20 days. I don't see how they can unless Congress gets its act together and passes legislation.
WBOB, your 2018 election authority. The latest traffic and weather on WBOB, your 2018 election authority.
It was always told to me that you needed a constitutional amendment.
Right. 14th Amendment.
You don't. Number one, you don't need that. Number two,
I mean, that's in dispute.
You could definitely
that's very much in dispute.
Well, you can definitely do it with an act of Congress, but now they're saying I can do it just with an executive order. Now, how ridiculous. We're the only country in the world where a person comes in, has a baby, and the baby is essentially a citizen of the United States for 85 years with all of those benefits. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And it has to end.
Have you talked about that with counsel?
Yeah, I have.
So where in the process?
It's in the process. It'll happen. With an executive order. That's what you're talking about, right?
Yeah,
that's
it's
a
exactly
very interesting
question.
I didn't think anybody but knew that but me. I thought I was the only one. Jonathan,
I've got a good guess.
Okay, joining us now, Sam Nunberg. He's part of Steve Bannon's new, cool political action committee. It's a C4. We talked to him yesterday. And Citizens for the American Republic, I call it CAR because that's the way I remember it, C4, they can't get involved with campaigns or coordinate anything. That's how it works. And Sam Nunberg with us now. Sam, a senior advisor for the C4. Sam, good to have you with us.
Ron, it's an honor.
Sam, so tell me, I'm kind of like following Bannon around, right? every day I want to know where he, I don't know why, it's just kind of fun. Like, where are you today, Bannon? So where, and I know you're traveling with him, where are you guys now? Kansas?
So we were in Nevada, and on Monday we had a great event at the Trump International Las Vegas. We showed Trump at War. We had Amy Tarkanian, Danny Tarkanian's wife. Danny Tarkanian is running in Nevada 3. She came to the event. We had John McDonald, who's a good friend of Corey's. He's Nevada GOP chairman. He was at the event. And then Steve had some meetings in the morning. We have done some polling, and we decided to go to Kansas very last minute. So last night we landed in Topeka. Mm-hmm. We had a gathering of 25 people in a small room at the Hilton, and in Holiday Inn Express, in Topeka. And as I talk to you, Steve is meeting with Chris Kobach. Later today, Steve is going to be talking to a congregation of Catholics. And then we are going to go over to Kobach's campaign headquarters to meet with some volunteers. Tomorrow we're readjusting. We're going to be in D.C. Steve had a prior commitment he had to take in Toronto. Saturday we're going to be in Virginia, and we are taking it from there.
All right. Sounds like you guys got a big schedule. Now, I just want to let everyone know again, because I've gotten calls from the media, Washington Post and others, the C4 cannot coordinate with campaigns. So people saying, well, is Dave Brat going to be there? Is Corey Stewart going to be there? If they feel like stopping by, like anybody else, they can stop by. But they cannot coordinate this with a campaign. So the question is, anybody can come to any of their events, but this is not coordinated with a campaign. They don't have to get permission because it's a C4. It's a separate entity, and they can't coordinate with federal or state campaigns. So just get that out there.
Oh, no. Well, in fact, John, let me tell you something. We were told by the Kansas GOP, the same Kansas GOP state party who has abandoned Chris Kobach, the same Kansas GOP who is going to lose the district that next to the one I'm sitting in right now, they had suggested that we don't even show up in their state. So we are motivating the base. We remember when anywhere Steve goes, they could talk about that 5 people were there, 25 people were there. They could say only X amount of people showed up. That's fine. Steve did 5 media interviews yesterday. He was on all the local affiliates talking about why people have to get out and vote. We feel that we have been extremely effective. You know, actually, this was something, if you want to go back to the Trump campaign, I actually, one of the things I learned from Corey Lewandowski was Corey said that Trump would get a lot of media, more media than you could think, and I didn't think it would be as much as he ended up getting. But everywhere you go, we saturate these markets. In this market, I have had the TV on. I have not seen one ad for Republicans. Democrats are spending in Kansas because they have outraised us by probably over $300 million this cycle. Mm-hmm. When I talk to the folks here in the restaurants, when I talked to them last night at our event, they tell me that all they hear are ads of Republicans talk. They get these repubics. They get these big government rhinos, the same people that Donald Trump had to take on. They go on the air talking about how they're going to be voting for the Democrat running in Congress. That's what the Democrat Party has done here, and it's pretty effective. With that said, I think with the president back on the campaign trail, continuing to nationalize this election, I don't believe the media. Let me give you a perfect example. I saw data in Nevada 3. If your audience goes on Nate Silver's website right now, mm-hmm. he says that the Democrat will win, has a 75% chance of winning. I tell you the Democrat has a 0% chance of winning that seat. I tell you out of Nevada, we are going to come out of there definitely plus one, perhaps plus two, with the way that Nevada 4 is trending. So don't believe what you're hearing. There's a plan behind everything. We have to get to as many of these markets as we can. There's only so much that Donald Trump can do. There's only so much that his allies can do in time. You know, they're saying that Donald Trump, the president, the same guy who interviewed the president about citizenship, which I'd like to get to if we can very briefly, John.
Right.
He writes an article saying here's the president's schedule. The president has completely abandoned the House. That's simply not true. If you look at the schedule that he has taken, every trip he goes to Florida is important to protect seats. Yeah. As of now, we can keep the House if we only come out of that state negative one. Mm-hmm. That is it. I think, I'm not going to go over the seat. I think we'll probably lose. But if we come out negative one there, and Andrew Gillum and Rick Scott end up winning their respective gubernatorial and Senate races on the back of Donald Trump, he has done something to save the Senate. By him going to Missouri, he's able to get into those other markets that are neighboring next door. So I spoke to the White House as well just to get their read, and they have not given up on the House. So whatever people want to read, whatever Paul Ryan's group wants to start telling people, because as we know, I'm sure Mr. Ryan, who came out against the president on what the president said, which he's 100% right from a legal constitutional point of view about his executive order, mm-hmm. Ryan came out against it. They are wrong. They are wrong. Mm-hmm. I think that as we talk frequently, I think that right now, if people get out and vote, we will keep the House. Now, I'm not telling you we're going to gain seats in the House. What I'm telling you is that if everybody wants to vote, support the president's agenda, support this movement, basically support us, support right. the people, we can keep the House. And by the way, besides that, Republicans will keep Republicans in control of the House. We'll leave the barbarians at the hordes, at the gates, the hordes at the gates, mm-hmm. in Pelosi, Nadler, and Schiff.
The narrative that the president has abandoned the House is about the stupidest thing I ever heard. They have 11 rallies in 5 days, okay? 11 rallies, big rallies in 5 days. Now, what are you going to do when you do a big rally and you get 20,000 people? Well, you're going to do it in the states where there's a Senate race up for grabs so you can get the most bang for the buck. But then you pick the congressional district that you need to draw from. So he's going to Fort Myers, Florida today. Guess what? That's a competitive seat, both in the Senate and the House. After that, he's going to Columbia, Missouri. Same thing. Got a Senate race, and that's an important seat in the House. Then he's going to Indianapolis. He's going to Montana to take out Tester. I mean, he's going to Macon, Georgia. There's a competitive seat there. I mean, Chattanooga, same thing. So the president, their strategy is we're going to have these mega rallies. We got 11 of them in 6 days. Let's get the most bang for our buck. I mean, how is that abandoning the House? What a stupid narrative. Fake news.
And remember, when he goes to these rallies, I've been to these rallies. I've been to one of the rallies with him as president. He goes to these rallies. You also have the local media affiliates from all the neighboring states there as well.
Right.
He is saturating the TV.
Right.
When Steve Bannon shows up, we're in Topeka, Kansas, on 12 hours notice. John, we have three local affiliates here all waiting in the Holiday Inn Express to meet with him after he sits down with the major newspapers.
Right.
So that is what we're doing here. I mean, that you have to saturate the media. Otherwise, all they will hear, the average viewer who doesn't follow politics like us, you know, they actually have to they have real lives. They're not Democrat voters. They have real lives. They have to take care of their families. They have to work in the private and, you know, public sectors and live and, you know, pay taxes. They don't have time to follow all this.
Right.
So you have to get their attention any way possible.
I know.
So I think we're in do or die time here.
So you say you're coming to Virginia. Unfortunately, I told Bannon I will not be there. I'll be in Mississippi on Saturday with my older son.
Yeah, you told me yesterday. Yes,
yeah, I'll be with my older son. So, but let me just ask you this. I've got a lot of text here, people saying, where's Bannon going to be? Where's he showing the movie? Is anything set? Have you said anything, or are you still working on it?
I'll tell you what, John, just your audience knows, and you can just let us talk about it tomorrow on air. We are about to reserve a space today. I'll let you know as soon as we do.
All right. Thank you, Sam. Is the president's – does he have the authority – you're a lawyer. Does he have the authority to do an executive order to stop birthright citizenship of these anchor babies?
The short answer is yes. The reason being, as Mark Levine, as Daniel Horowitz has explained – more eloquently than me, but let me just say, the INS has only through the INS through regulations or through regulatory powers has simply just started letting people become American citizens when they were born in the United States without American parents. Therefore, the president could change the INS as the INS falls under the executive branch. It is very simple. That is it. There has never been a law passed giving these people citizenship. There has never been a constitutional amendment that said specifically you are a citizen if you are born in this country. What we have, the closest we have ever had to any ruling has been that you need one American parent outside of American territory to be considered an American citizen.
All right, so here's what's going to happen. The president's going to follow through on this executive order. It'll get immediately stayed by a number of judges at the appellate division, the Ninth Circuit, whatever, Hawaii, San Francisco. They'll all stay it. So right. Nothing is going to happen. It's going to work its way up to the Supreme Court. And then I guess, Sam, we're going to find out if the battle over Kavanaugh was really worth it, right?
We may, but, you know, this may be a decision that is 9-0 or 7-2. Due to the fact that what the president's executive order will say is he won't be taking citizenship away from prior people. Just from the date that he has signed that executive order, he will say, to clarify, you must have American parents to be considered an American citizen. I do not care where you were born. It doesn't matter if you were born in the White House. And then we'll find out. Because remember, once again, there has been no law ever passed. The INS started doing this during the 60s, simply granting everyone through chain migration this citizenship. So, John, I think it's a pretty simple decision.
Joining me now, Stephen Moore. Steve is a longtime economist and economic advisor to President Trump, and he's also the author of the new book out, Trumponomics. Stephen Moore, great to have you back, sir.
Good morning. Great to be with you. And it is so. Do you see the consumer confidence numbers, by the way, that came out yesterday? Highest consumer confidence in 18 years. I mean, this is an unbelievable boom we're in right now.
And Steve, tell me about the wage increases, 3.1%. Nobody's talking about this either. Tell us about that.
Well, look, first of all, is the book the book points out, you know, we wrote this book and I wrote it with my originally it was going to be the three of us, Laffer and I and Larry Kudlow. But of course, Larry then got the job as being the chief economist for Trump over at the White House and asked me to come on over. And I said, look, I got to finish this book, you know, and so we had a lot of fun writing it. And it's basically, you know, about our experiences helping Trump grow this economy, writing the plan with him. And people always ask me, well, how did Trump do it? You know, how has Trump caused this economic miracle? And my answer to that is very simple. This is a guy who is pro-business. He is a businessman. We replaced a community organizer with a businessman who knows how to make a profit, who knows how to meet a payroll, who knows how to, you know, grow a business. And, you know, he's one of our most successful businessmen. And he's brought those principles to Washington, the White House. And that's the reason the economy, which was growing at 1.5% when Obama left office, 1.5%, which is barely staying out of recession. The economy is now growing at, you know, close to 4%. It's an amazing revival. And I saw the president the other day, by the way, at the White House and at the Rose Garden ceremony he had. And I just had a few minutes to talk to him. I said, Mr. President, this is working better than even we thought it would when we drew up the plans. And he just smiled and he said, you ain't seen nothing yet. So, you know, the economy isn't slowing down. This is going to be, you know, a very, very strong, economy for, I think, several years to come.
Okay, so let's talk, Steve, a little bit about small businesses and how they've been benefited by this economy, and how does that translate into the midterms?
Well, look, you know, when we put the kind of gemstone of the Trump agenda, of course, has been the tax cut, you know, and by the way, it's amazing to me. Democrats are running against the tax cut. I mean, the tax cut has been such a phenomenal success in terms of bonuses, higher. You mentioned the 3% wage increases for workers. That's one of the biggest wage increases we've seen in 20 years. This was always about every meeting we had with Donald Trump about the tax plan. He always says, I want to make sure that this benefits two groups of people. Small businesses, he said, I don't want to, look, I understand we got to cut our corporate tax, but every small business has to get a tax cut too. And the other thing he always said is, let's make sure that this is this benefits middle class Americans. He said, you know, it's all about how do we help middle class Americans, you know, improve their standing. And that's what I think Trump is so pleased about, is that, you know, we include bonuses, overtime pay that people are getting, the fact that we have the lowest unemployment rate in, what, 50 years.
Right.
This is what's benefiting middle class, working class Americans, the kind of people who took a risk and voted for Trump in the first place.
Steve, tell us about your new book, Trumponomics.
Well, it's a first-hand account. You know, people say, I don't want to buy that book. I don't like economics. I'm afraid of economics. This isn't really an economics book. It's more, if you, by the way, you can read it three or four nights. It's just basically the story of how Trump, you know, performed this economic miracle and our personal experiences with him. It's all written in the first person, you know, in terms of how Trump, and Trump is one of the most interesting people I've ever met in my life. I mean, he is larger than life. He's very gracious. He's very fun to be around. You know, sometimes people think, you know, sometimes in public he acts like a jerk, but in private, he's one of the most gracious, you know, attentive people. He cares so much about, he cares about working class Americans. Every decision he makes is going to be, how is this going to affect the guy who works in, you know, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, or Rockford, Illinois, or Flint, Michigan, places that were left behind and never really felt a recovery. And that was really the whole reason that he won the election, is because he was, all these people had been forgotten about, you know, under Obama, who had never seen a recovery. Those are the people that these policies were designed to, you know, for example, the coal miners. You know, Hillary Clinton ran around the country saying, I'm going to put every coal miner out of a job. And Trump went to those areas and said, no, I'm not going to kill your job. I'm going to make sure you've got a job and you keep that job and you get more money in your wallet. I mean, that's a very different attitude.
Yeah, it is. We're with Stephen Moore. He is the long-term economist. He's also the architect of President Trump's and Candidate Trump's economic plan. He just came out with a new book, Trumponomics, and you want to read that. Stephen, let me ask a tough question, if I may, and then I'm going to get to the midterm. So the Trump economic plan was very, very easy for someone like me who is a protectionist. I didn't like TPP. I fought against NAFTA back in the day. I hated that. Yeah. I hated the Korean trade deal. I'm a protectionist. I never met a tariff I didn't like, okay? So that's easy for me to embrace the Trump trade policies, okay? Somebody like yourself, though, who is a free trader, how did you reconcile this?
Well, that's a great question. We deal a lot about that in the book, you know, because when Trump asked Larry Kudlow and I and Art Laffer to work with him, you know, the first thing we said is, you know, we can't work for you, Donald. We called him Donald back then. He wasn't president, because we're for free trade and you're a protectionist. And, you know, free trade is one of the pillars of economic growth. And he, I remember he got angry at us and said, you know, well, I'm not a protectionist. He said, I believe in, you know, international commerce and international trade. I'm a businessman. I understand, you know, we want open markets. But he said, look, these other countries aren't playing by the rules. He said, it's not a level playing field. They are not living up to their agreements, and they're playing us like fools. And you know what? Sometimes the master teaches you something. And you know, we started looking at the evidence, and lo and behold, it turned out to be true that a lot of these countries were not living up to their end of the bargain. And, you know, these countries like China and Japan and, the Europeans were charging much higher tariffs than we were. And so, you know, Trump is using this billy club, this stick of threatened tariffs to get these other countries to behave themselves and lower their tariffs and open up their markets to Americans. Now, the one thing I disagree with strongly of Trump, and we talk about this in the book, I think the steel tariffs are a total disaster. I think they are not creating jobs for Americans. They're actually causing a loss of jobs because it's made steel more expensive here. And that means, you know, for companies like Caterpillar or, our manufacturing companies, it's harder for them to compete in the global market. So I'm not a sycophant for Trump. Most of the things he does, I think, are fantastic. Some of the things I disagree with. Now, you may like the steel tariffs, but I don't think they're working.
I love the steel tariffs, to be honest with you, because you can't be a 21st century economy and not be able to produce steel because other countries produce it cheaper. And so that's just a false choice that we have. And you got the Chinese dumping steel in the U.S. They've been doing it forever. They subsidize it. So you're trying to compete with a communist government subsidizing the cost of production, dumping it in the United States, and paying a 1% tariff tax when it comes over on the ship. And that's basically to take it off the dock. And so,
we can agree to disagree on that one. I just think, look, it's steel is the input for everything that we produce. You know, not everything, but most of the manufacturing is made with steel.
Right.
And if we have to build stuff with, look how it's hurting our auto industry. You know, the autos are made out of steel, right? And if you can buy a car in Japan with, 20% lower cost steel, that puts our auto companies at a disadvantage. But look, overall, what Trump has done is created the best job market ever. I mean, we're going to have another jobs report tomorrow. You know how many jobs they're expecting? Another 200,000. I mean, we're running out of workers in this country. Trump is creating so many jobs, we don't have enough workers to fill them up.
I know, it's unbelievable.
It's a great time to be looking for a job, folks. If you're looking for a job and you got any skill, you can get a job in 24 hours. I mean, this is an amazing market. I told my kids this. Get off your butts and get a job. Come on. They're out there.
It is amazing. And the number that no one sees is the number of people that are entering the job market that were not factored in, Stephen. They gave up after the recession. They couldn't get a job. There were five people applying for two jobs. They just left the job market. Now they're coming back in. And that's also creating a tax base. Why isn't this going to translate into the midterms? I mean, why are Republicans at risk of losing the House when people are going
because
to vote on Tuesday?
They are the most incompetent group of people. They couldn't sell water in a desert. They couldn't set up a lemonade stand in the desert and sell the stuff. I mean, here we got the strongest economy in 30 years. We got all these numbers are just off the charts in terms of, how people feel about the direction of the country. And yet Republicans don't talk about it. They don't talk about the economy. They don't talk about the tax cut, which has put $2,000 into the pockets of every middle-class family in America. I mean, I get so frustrated with Republicans. How can they not be – and by the way – folks, if you vote for these Democrats, they're going to repeal the tax cut. They're going to set us right back to where we were when we had 1.5% growth under Obama.
It is mind-boggling, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, there's a reason we call the Republican Party the stupid party, because they just can't sell a message. I mean, you got to give credit. One good thing about Democrats is that they're very disciplined in their message. They keep saying the same thing over and over again. Free health care for everybody, minimum wage increase, blah, blah, blah. They don't deviate from their message. Tax cuts for the rich, which was complete nonsense.
Right.
The middle class benefited from the tax cuts, but they keep saying it over and over again. Republicans can't seem to get a message out, and even though they got a phenomenal record, and Trump is the only one who's talking about this stuff. Have you noticed that?
Yes. Yes, the only one at his rallies.
By the way, I got to put a word in for my good friend Dave Brat in Virginia. What a great congressman, great conservative, and he's even in the polls. You're going to throw Dave Brat out? He's the guy who gave you the tax cut. He's the one who's worked with Trump on all of this stuff. A great conservative, a pro-business guy who understands the economy, I don't understand why he's not up by 20 points.
I know, right? I think he's going to win, but it's going to be tight. Stephen, I'm out of time.
He's fantastic. He's one of the great, true, principled conservatives out there.
Stephen, thank you. I'm out of time.
All right.
Pass that to Dave.
Let's talk out.